This podcast is supported by Starglow Media's Mysteries About True Histories. From the creators of the hit, top-ranking kids educational podcast in the world, Who Smarted, the Emmy-nominated Nat Geo Disney Plus's Brain Games, and Netflix's Brain Child, comes Mysteries About True Histories, affectionately known as MATH, or math, in which kids ages 6 and up can hear humorous and educational stories that follow two best friends, Max and Molly, while they go on adventures through time, solving puzzles, hidden equations, talking about history, and making learning cool. Episodes transport listeners to moments in history like Pythagoras's ancient Greece, the era of the Aztecs, Sir Isaac Newton's England, and more. When I drive my son to school in the morning, we listen to these episodes that fit perfectly in our commute, with the episodes being about 15 minutes long. And this podcast is right up my son's alley because he loves to solve problems and happens to love math and the types of punny jokes that Max likes to tell. So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods. Welcome to Mom and Mind, where we dive into all aspects of perinatal mental health and wellness related to pregnancy, birth, loss, postpartum, and new parenthood. It's so much more than postpartum depression. We raise the volume on all of these topics in the hopes that someday everyone will have the support and info that they deserve before they need it. Please note this podcast is not a replacement for treatment by a professional or professional training. Welcome to Mom and Mind. I am your host, Dr. Kat, perinatal mental health certified psychologist. Rounding out Maternal Mental Health Month, we have a story from a working mom, wife, and proud daughter of Filipino immigrants, Lynette Madeja Bravo. She's going to be sharing with us her personal experience, what were some of the hardest things that she went through in the postpartum period that she was not expecting, how was it to navigate the healthcare system to find a therapist, returning to work after parental leave, and so many other things that I'm sure a lot of you can relate to. Lynette lives in the Pacific Northwest and is mommy to two-year-old Isabella. Professionally, she has worked for local government for almost a decade and is most passionate about serving those in her community that are most marginalized and furthest from opportunity. Overwhelmed by the unexpected realities of being a new mom, breastfeeding issues, and other life events, Lynette decided to seek professional help at 8 weeks postpartum. Her experience with postpartum depression and anxiety ignited a passion for helping new moms and families. She is also passionate about decreasing cultural stigma and reducing barriers to mental health support and resources for those who need it most. She continues to work through her postpartum depression and anxiety with a specialized therapist and shares her story as a way of healing. She hopes to one day become professionally trained to become a therapist or a support person specializing in perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. A lot of people who go through a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder feel transformed by the experience. It is a life-changing event. And I think it's very worth it to say that not everybody goes on to change their career path. We do have a lot of guests on here who have gone through a lot and who've decided to turn around and help other moms. But I think it's also worth it to say that not everybody follows that path, and that's okay too. I think it can be hard sometimes to hear stories of people who feel transformed and want to change their careers and want to go and do big things or write books or start foundations, to feel like you also need to do more or to feel some pressure by that. I just want it to be so clear that if it's your calling and if it's what you want to do with your life to support and serve other people who have gone through perinatal mental health conditions, that's great. But you absolutely don't have to. There are many, many parents and families and moms and dads who do heal and who do feel better. And through hearing stories like Lynette's and all the different barriers that people can experience based on so many different factors, the hope is that for somebody out there, maybe even you, you can know that you are not alone and that you can feel better as well. Let's hear from Lynette. Welcome, Lynette. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Kat. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm really grateful to be here.
I'm really glad to be able to share your story with our listeners and so thankful for you for coming on to share because I think it's an important one. So I'd love for you to just start wherever you feel comfortable.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Kat. So I knew that I wanted to be a mom from a very young age. I loved kids, you know, babysat and nannied throughout my teenage years, helped out at church in the nursery, and even nannied throughout high school and in college, and I was definitely dubbed the mom of our friend group as well. Mm-hmm. And I got pregnant immediately after my husband and I got married almost 3 years ago now. Shortly after we came home from our honeymoon, we found out that I was pregnant, and it was completely unexpected, which was shocking to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that came with a lot of mixed emotions. I knew I wanted to have a child, but I wasn't sure on the timing. And, but, you know, overall, I was extremely happy. My husband was really thrilled and excited. I think he was more excited than me because I was just so shocked. But it was a very easy pregnancy for the most part. I loved being pregnant. I've never felt so in tune with my body, and I loved shopping for my daughter. I loved getting things ready. But looking back now, I think that I romanticized motherhood during my pregnancy, maybe my whole life. And so for me, that was something that I've definitely reflected on in my postpartum journey. But but in terms of that, you know, my pregnancy was pretty easy. I was really grateful for that. However, it did get tougher in the third trimester, as I'm sure it does for most pregnant women. And but looking back, you know, my job was also very demanding and stressful during that time. I also became very anemic, and I required more visits to my OB. I remember my anxiety just running, like shooting through the roof around the birth process. I was scared of the pain. I was scared of dying. And, you know, at the time, my thoughts seemed very extreme to me. I didn't know that really what I was having were intrusive thoughts. So that
this
was
during pregnancy. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And more, I would say more towards the third trimester as things were getting closer. And so birth came and it went as expected. Things were pretty smooth. There were a few scary moments, but overall it went better than I thought. My daughter came and I was just overwhelmed with love and joy. I was so happy, you know, that those moments that you see on TV or that you, you know, can even see on social media. It was immediately, it was all that I really had dreamed of. And I was really thinking in that moment, yeah, this is what I was made to do. I was made to be a mom. But as quickly as that adrenaline came, it wore off very quickly as well. After our family left that first night and it was just me and my husband, I remember we looked at each other and we're like, well, what do we do now? Like, this is it.
This is like when you're going home?
Actually, no, it was after our family left. And you know, my husband and I were very family oriented, so we're very lucky to have great support systems. But I don't know what it was after them leaving that I was like, oh, wow, it's just us. Because my mom and my sister-in-law and my husband were in the birthing room with me, which was great. And so I remember that same night, I had this very clear thought. I missed having her in my womb where it was safe. And I couldn't hear her crying. She wasn't having a hard time eating. And so I remember that I had felt that way for, I would say, several months after my daughter was born. And, you know, breastfeeding didn't start so well. And looking back now, I think it was the biggest factor towards my postpartum depression and anxiety. And I knew enough that breastfeeding wasn't supposed to hurt, but I was so concerned that my daughter wasn't getting enough to eat that I let her just gnaw away at my nipples until they were raw. I knew they weren't supposed, it wasn't supposed to hurt, but I was so concerned that she wasn't getting enough to eat that I just let her do that. And, you know, the nights in the hospital were a little stressful. Nurses were coming in and out, and I would ask each one for help on breastfeeding. And everyone has great intentions. I'm so grateful for nurses. But I was also very overwhelmed because everyone had something different to say. And I didn't know. Yeah. And I didn't know whose advice to follow. I remember not letting them take her to the nursery because I was anxious something would happen to her. And I remember one night I was just having such a hard time with breastfeeding that one of the providers told me, well, you should just do formula. And I remember being really upset because I wanted to breastfeed. And there's nothing wrong with formula, but for myself, I knew that I wanted breastfeeding to happen. And it was just so exhausting. And, you know, it took me a while into motherhood to realize that at the end of the day, my husband and I are the ones who know what's best for our daughter. Like, we make the decisions. I think so much in the hospital, I was just trying to, okay, who should I listen to?
Right.
Like, which is the correct answer? And there, and the parent who we know, there aren't correct answers. Every family is so different. Every parent is so different. So after we were discharged from the hospital, we went back after one night at home for our lactation appointment. And I remember the nurse practitioner taking a long time. to come back with some results. And apparently my daughter had lost over 10% body weight and needed to take formula right away and go to the NICU. But I remember I was so frustrated because I wasn't being walked through the process of what was happening.
This is when you're at home?
No, we actually went back to the hospital for a lactation appointment.
Oh, got it, got it.
Yeah.
Oh, so how was far the after hospital? Birth? Sorry.
No, that's all right. It was, I would say, maybe, I think, 3 days after giving birth.
Okay.
So apparently my daughter had lost over 10% of her body weight, and I remember her just saying she needs to take formula right now. And I was like, wait, hold on, but why? I'm not understanding,
right?
You know, why my milk isn't enough. And she was also, I guess, had jaundice. And I remember the nurse practitioner was telling me, you need to go to the NICU right now. And so I think so much of early, especially those first few days,
you're in
such a fog. It's very numbing. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize the gravity of her statement until we got to the NICU and the nurses were, you know, they were asking each other. We remember seeing them huddled around, and it turned out that 10% body weight that she had lost, and actually now that I think about it, it might be a little bit higher, was grossly inaccurate. Like, she was weighed incorrectly. So,
oh gosh.
Yeah. So in reality, we didn't need the NICU. We could have had, but I felt so much hurt because I'm like, wow, I have only had my baby for 3 days and I can't even feed her correctly. Oh, but you know, looking back, I was really grateful for that NICU stay because that's where I learned how to pump. That's where I even learned to wash bottles. I think those things you don't think about while you're pregnant, right? At least mm-hmm. I didn't. I didn't think about, oh, I should learn how to pump. I should learn how to wash bottles. I was too concerned about how would her nursery look like, you know, sort of the things that we can, that are not necessarily wrong, but I think we can get so caught up in that I felt naive for not being more realistic about the realities that can come with motherhood. So again, you know, breastfeeding was just the hardest part of that early time. I didn't produce as much milk as I thought I would. I put so much pressure on myself and didn't want to do formula. And I'm not sure why. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't know. I think it was pressure from media, mm-hmm. from extended family. I'm not sure what that was. But
so in terms of what was going on between the lactation appointment and the NICU, were they suggesting that your supply was too low, or that the whole NICU stay was not even necessary, or both?
I think it was a little bit of both. Her jaundice levels were pretty high, uh-huh. so they wanted her to, you know, spend some time under the light. However, we realized we could have done that at home. But since we were at the NICU anyway for what they thought was extreme weight loss, they said, you know, let's just keep you. So I think it was a little bit of both. And I believe their concern was just making sure that she would gain back that weight that she lost right after birth. So since I wasn't pumping enough milk, or so they said, they wanted to supplement with the formula, which was fine with me. I realized, you know, the gravity of the situation, so I was fine with doing it. But I was more hard on myself for saying, well, why isn't my body making the milk that she needs?
Right.
Which I know now is what she needed, right? But in the thick of it, it was just so disappointing to me.
Mm, that's hard. Well, it's so much to deal with in just 3 or 4 days after birth. And you're still in the process of just like, your baby just came here, your body yes. is trying to heal, and that's a lot to try yes. and work, like, understand.
Yeah. So, you know, breastfeeding and sleep are just the biggest things for me. It turned out my daughter had a tongue tie, and so we got that fixed. And in my mind, having that fixed meant that she would eat better. And, you know, that wasn't the case. We had to end up doing these stretches to the wounds, and I just felt like I was hurting her. Mm. And it wasn't getting better. Weeks would pass. She wasn't eating enough. I was pumping. We were doing formula. We were doing all different things. I was losing sleep. So anxious about wanting to get this right. And everything that I tried to control that didn't work out, it just made things worse. And my daughter was also very colicky. She woke up every 2 to 3 hours, and she never slept a long stretch. Mm-hmm. And by long stretch, I'm meaning 3 to 4 hours mm-hmm. until months after she turned one. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. in that first year, I let her nurse throughout the night, and we co-slept, which to this day, I don't regret any of that time.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't always comfortable, but I cherished those precious moments, just me and her throughout the night. But you know, throughout all of that, I ended up taking my daughter to different feeding therapists. I went to different breastfeeding support groups, which were all, you know, quite a ways away. So there was a little bit of traveling, but I remember telling myself, I'm going to do anything that I can in my power to make this work. And, you know, I would say several months later, I saw a therapist, and something that she said to me said, at what point are you okay with telling yourself that what you did was enough for your baby? Because I was just trying to do so many things to control the situation. And that really made me rethink. But
this podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go. And that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was 6. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
I have a question, because I think a lot of moms have feeding anxiety, it's specifically with nursing, because you can't tell how much they're drinking at any given time. So it's hard to gauge. And so sometimes babies are being fed enough, but the anxiety makes the mom worry that they're not. And then sometimes there is, a supply complication. And the anxiety or the worry is because it's been confirmed that there is, a feeding challenge. So where did that end up for you?
I'm glad you brought that up, Dr. Kat, because you saying that reminded me, at every pediatrician appointment that we had, her pediatrician assured me she was on track. She was gaining weight, no issues. But I was in denial. I was in denial, and I'm not sure what that was. Maybe because I translated, she's not sleeping at night, which means she's not eating at night. But we know that, some babies, they just don't sleep, consistently in that first year, which of course I know now, but back then I obsessed over it.
Did it feel obsessive at the time?
It did. Mm-hmm. And after, a few months later, when I was processing it with my therapist, she said, I think you might've had OCD tendencies during that early time. But for me, it's like, well, isn't this just what being a mom is? I just need to make sure that she's okay. Like, what am I doing wrong? But yes, I would think that it's obsessive, because even when, her doctor told me she's fine, my husband's like, she's fine. I was in such denial. So I think, yes, it definitely was a little bit obsessive.
Okay. Yeah. I thank you so much for bringing in all of this, but very specifically that part of the question. And also right now, it's very relevant now, because anxiety is just higher just in this current pandemic. And so I've been seeing this particular anxiety come up more and more just in general with new moms, because you want what's best for your baby. And that's so natural and so real and so deep. And it's really hard to tell when the anxiety is the anxiety or when it's a real thing that you actually need to attend to. And that can take many, many different forms during this period of time. But with nursing, breastfeeding, it's really, really hard because it's,
yes,
it's from your body. And there's mm-hmm. no way for that to not feel personal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
And no, thank you. So throughout this time, you know, my crying, I would just have such random crying fits. And it was particularly hard when my mom and husband went back to work and I was at home alone with my daughter. Mm-hmm. So we are a multi-generational household. My mom lives with us. My younger brother lives with us as well. So I'm very grateful for that support system. So that's another piece for me too. I felt a lot of guilt around my postpartum depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. I felt that I had no right to feel what I feel because my baby's healthy. I didn't have a particularly traumatic birth experience. I have lots of support at home. You know, we are a very privileged family. You know, we're two income households. We have a roof over our heads. And so I felt a lot of guilt around my postpartum. Like, how dare I feel this way and when there are so many other moms and families suffering more than us, right? So, but I learned to feel what I feel and to stop comparing traumas because all of our stories are so unique. Right. But during this time, you know, I didn't feel bonded to my baby. I felt so disconnected and I missed my old life immensely. And at the darkest moments, I just felt so unequipped and terrible that I became suicidal for the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. And that was really scary to me because I had never felt that way before, right. ever. Right. I'm a generally very positive person. And I knew I wouldn't act on it, but just the thought coming to my head was just really scary for me to have.
Yeah.
I remember I would just dread nighttime because I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep well. And then I dreaded morning because I knew I'd be alone in the house again. And I think, you know, my sense of time was just so warped. I couldn't see the end of the tunnel. So much of early parenthood just felt like loss after loss. I couldn't get breastfeeding right, at least to my expectations. And I couldn't get enough sleep. I missed time with my husband. I missed spontaneity and the ease of leaving the house. Right. And also, you know, my friendships shifted. I was the first of my friends, at least my close circle of friends, to have a baby. And I felt a lot of isolation and a lot of loneliness from my support systems. And you know, a few people from my systems would help with food and visits, but, you know, the ones that I expected the most from it just didn't happen. And and that's just a projection on myself. You know, everyone has busy lives and it's hard to empathize with someone, you know, for some folks, if it's just not happening to you, right? Like all of us have things going on. So that was just more something that I was thinking for myself. But I think I just felt unheard. Mm-hmm. Unseen and really inadequate. I felt like nobody could relate to me except, you know, maybe my husband, my mom, and my brother who was living with us. And I really clearly remember going days without stepping one foot out of the house, not even to check the mail or get some fresh air. And I didn't realize it until my husband or my mom would say, hey, maybe you should just step out for a few minutes. And I didn't want to do it. I just wanted to be in my house. I just never realized that. And it came to a breaking point for me at 8 weeks postpartum. I had terrible pain in my abdomen that brought me to the ER. Mm. The pain was so unbearable. Actually, I would say it was a lot worse than contractions. I was telling my husband, I'd much rather have contractions than this. I have no idea what this pain is. And what the doctor thought was appendicitis was actually diverticulitis, a diverticulitis flare. Wow. And so I was diagnosed with diverticulosis, and it didn't help that my doctor had said this disease is most typical in those over age 60. So that's not helpful. And at that moment, I felt so defeated. I was upset because I was away from my baby. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I was able to pump, but I was stressed out because I knew I wouldn't be able to feed her that milk that I was pumping because all of the medicines that I was on. Mm. And the doctor told me that diverticulosis flares are triggered by stress, and I was beyond stressed at that point.
You sure.
And so this was my breaking point, you know. The stress and fatigue that I was experiencing, I realized was now manifesting through my body. Mm-hmm. So I knew I needed to get help. And so I decided for the first time in my life to see a therapist. And I had my appointment at 9 weeks postpartum. And I remember it being so hard to get out of the house for the first session. And I think because, you know, I never paid much attention to mental health before. And I think it's because there's so much taboo, and we know that mental health can be stigmatized for sure. And especially in my culture, and not only in my culture, but in my faith, I'm a Christian. And so I think so much we try to push our problems to prayer, which is helpful for me. I know that's powerful and needed, but I also know that people are gifted with the skills to help people process through what they need to process. And so now I truly know the importance of mental health and how much we don't pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. And it's important to me because I can see how it wasn't prioritized in my family and my community. And because of that, how that hurts ourselves and others and future generations.
So you'd mentioned a little bit before about how culture played a part. Can you expand on that a little bit?
So I would say that growing up, I didn't really know how to talk about my emotions or how to express how I felt. I think that I always had this idea, and that this, you know, can come from many places, that getting mental health treatment must mean that you're crazy, that something's wrong with you.
Sure.
And admitting that you need help is shameful, right? And I have this idea of that I must be successful and I can't show signs of weakness, especially in being a mom, right? Because this is what, as a woman, I'm supposed to do. And this is what we're made to do, right? At least, and that's what we're socialized to think, because we know that not everyone desires to be a parent, and that's okay. And so I think a lot of that kind of translated into just not wanting to also be vulnerable and share about what's going on in my own personal life. I think that's just something that brought in a more broad sense as a culture, there can be a lot of pride behind that. Like, oh, well, we're doing well. And I think some of it might be, you know, my parents are immigrants. And so in that, right.
From the Philippines.
From the Philippines, yes. And because of that, them immigrating to this country, as we've seen with a lot of immigrant parents and their children, they've had to assimilate to this country. They've had to say goodbye to their culture, you know, told that their language is not okay, told that they have to learn English. And so I think a lot of that translate into, well, we need to make sure that we're doing well and that other people know we're doing well, which is, you know, which can be true and is true. Yeah. But I think sometimes showing vulnerability isn't always the best way to go about that.
Sure. Yeah. I think that, thank you for bringing that in, because I do think, culturally speaking, that is like an unseen pressure that certainly a lot of immigrant cultures feel. And I just think it's really, really important. And there may be very different ways that that's expressed in Filipino culture, you know, the nuances of culture and whatnot. But I do see that there is a lot of pressure. Yes. It's nothing, you know, nothing specifically good or bad. It is what it is when you're coming to a different country and, you know, wanting your family to be healthy and
Exactly. And, you know, I think that, and also I think there's a generational difference too. And I grew up here in the U.S., you know, I was born in Guam, and so I wasn't raised in the Philippines, but I think that younger generations that are raised in the U.S. often have a better understanding of mental illness and access to mental health care than maybe those in our family. And so, but I'm encouraged to see that so many of us are wanting to have that healing for our family, for our generations, right? Like, that is something that I'm so passionate about. And, you know, aside from, you know, coupled with working with moms, but there's so many of us that are wanting to bring that healing for our families as well. And us sharing our stories is part of that.
Right. So I kind of cut you off the timeline of your story dive into that a little bit. But you were in your story anyhow, you were kind of talking about the after effects of this diverticulosis.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I started seeing a therapist at 9 weeks postpartum, and she diagnosed me with postpartum depression and anxiety. And I saw her on and off throughout those first couple of months. I remember, I think I went 7 months again without seeing her because I felt like I was doing better. But then I went back to see her when my daughter was a little over a year old. So, you know, it came in waves when I would feel good about certain things. It definitely got a little bit easier as my daughter started taking solids, right? And things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a few themes that I've noticed in the first year, now that I'm out of the fog, looking back on that period in my life, there was a lot going on in my life. I had a lot of big transitions in very quick succession. I got married, had a baby right away, and I was dealing with a lot of extended family issues at the time that I felt a lot of heaviness for and a lot of responsibility for. I also changed jobs. So right before I gave birth, I actually transitioned over to a less hectic job because I knew that I needed to be in a different role to care like I wanted to for my daughter. And then I had this new health diagnosis that I have to live with for the rest of my life. So there was just a lot going on. I also realized that I was trying to be who I was before and my new self.
Yes, so hard.
And I led a very, I would say, a pretty ambitious, fast-paced former life. I was very active in my community. I was doing a lot of different things. And I guess I was trying to prove to myself that I could do all the things I did before I had a baby and more.
Right.
In all of those realms, in my career, my work in the community. So I guess I was trying to prove to myself that I could do all the things I did before and more in my career, my work, in my community. And really what got me back to where I am now is just also returning to my faith. I also felt really disconnected from my church community. And that was just my own fault. you know, in everything that was going on, I just isolated myself from all of my support systems. But my faith was really a strong one for me, is a strong one for me. So for me to self-isolate from that didn't help either. And all of that, returning to my faith and coupling with therapy helped to heal me. So those were some of the major themes that I noticed in the first year.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Thanks for pulling those out in terms of, like, you know, your experience, because when you're in it, it's so hard to know why it feels so hard.
Yes.
Like what all the context is, the why, outside of, you know, the things that we don't always know, like hormones and biology and genetics and all that. But oftentimes I do find there's some life things that are hard to see how big the impact is when you're in them.
Yes.
And that reflection afterwards really does help to give it the context, and I think for some people too, some release of guilt too, as a way to explain, like, oh, this is why it was so hard. All these things were going on.
Yes. And you can't see that when you're in the fog, when you're in the thick of it, you know, and that takes time, which I think is the hard part.
Right. Looking back on your experience, what was the hardest thing you experienced that you weren't expecting to?
Sure. So there, you know, there are a few things here. I would say first, the grief and mourning. I didn't realize how much I would grieve the life that I used to have, my career, the loss of free time, spontaneity, my body, time with my husband, and just leaving the house. And with that, you know, it was, I felt a lot of guilt about this.
Sure.
You know, again, here's my healthy baby. I have the ability to birth a child. And here I am mourning my past life. Like, how dare I feel that way, right? So I also, it was really difficult for me to look at pictures from that first year. And also before I was pregnant, or even when I was pregnant, it was really hard for me to look at pictures. I remember scrolling through my phone, and I came to find out that was a trigger for me. So I stopped doing that. And now, you know, I'm able to do it, but back then I just couldn't do this. And just that duality of desires, you know, there's so many things that you want to keep doing, but you can't. Another thing that was hard was managing expectations. And I learned very quickly that expectations were best to be let go of in parenthood. I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but so much of motherhood I romanticized. And while motherhood is my biggest joy, I do wish that we were more open and honest about the realities and struggles that new parents face in that first year, particularly that first year. And there's just so much that we can't control, right? Sleep, teething, emotions. I think we forget that our children are their own people, right? They're also they're also trying to adjust to the world. And so just managing our expectations on that, I didn't expect to have to do. And also just this major identity shift. I didn't know who I was anymore. I felt like I was a milk robot. I felt like I was supposed to enjoy motherhood. And I was just exhausted trying to be a good wife, daughter, sister, and mom all at the same time.
Right.
And so, but I'm grateful because having, you know, children, they force you to slow down, right? And I'm grateful that my daughter has helped me to slow down and just enjoy life in that process. And two other things that I didn't expect to experience is just how much of your past will resurface. Mm-hmm. And by
that's a big one.
I know. I'm so, like, what is going on?
Yeah.
So, and by that, I mean, you know, past trauma, unresolved issues, my childhood experience, how I was raised, and how do I want to translate or take what that looks like for me and how I raised my daughter. Right. And so I continue to go to therapy to work through my own issues so that I don't pass my own personal trauma on to my daughter and then the next generation. And this is something that I've come to realize is so important, that I need to be well mentally so that I can model this for my daughter and also serve my family the best way that I can too.
Right. And awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. That's big work.
It's hard work. And,
right.
And the last, yeah. And the last one, cultural reawakening for me. I have this deep desire to understand my Filipino roots on a deeper level, you know, learn my family history, learn more about the history of the Filipino people, the Filipinx people, and pass that on to my daughter too. My husband is Mexican, and so he also speaks Spanish. I understand my family's languages, but I don't speak it. I have this desire and need to keep passing on all that richness onto her. And one of my words for 2020 is generational. And so I think I have this innate fear that things will get lost as generations continue. And I feel a heavy weight sometimes to reduce that as much as possible. And it's been really great because I'm learning alongside my daughter too. So that's been a fun journey for sure.
I love this. That's so good and so real. And honestly, you made me remember a little part of my own postpartum experience that is similar to that I totally spaced on. So thank you for that. that is so powerful. You caught me by surprise. I didn't, just resonated with you. So that was lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah, that cultural stuff is so, so powerful. I know so many people will be able to resonate with you on that too.
And I think part of that is this identity shift, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm trying to figure out, I'm a mother now. What am I going to teach my daughter? You know, what am I going to teach her about who she is and where she's come from, right?
Right.
This powerful line of women in my family who I'm so proud of and I learn more about every day, right? I want her to know what that looks like, even on my husband's side with his sisters and his mom. Like, there's just so much rich history there that I didn't expect to want to learn about when I became a mom. Mm-hmm. So that's a big piece of my journey as well.
How cool. I love that. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's probably so much healing in there too.
Yes. I feel more whole. I think, you know, so many of those things are coming back into place for me. Mm-hmm. My faith, feeling reconnected back to Jesus, right? That's a big thing for me personally. Mm-hmm. And getting back to who I am as a person, my ethnicity, my heritage, my history. So a lot of that is just coming full circle for me.
So cool. I'm happy for you. That's awesome. Well,
thank you.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Going back a little bit to when you were talking about finding a therapist and how that was for you, can you talk to us a little bit about what that was like?
Sure. It was difficult in a sense that I wanted to see a therapist who was a woman. That was important to me, but more particularly a woman of color. And I also wanted someone who was specialized in PMATs. Mm-hmm. And it was just difficult to find someone who was specialized in that, at least up here in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for the work that all therapists do, but I just wanted to connect with someone who, you know, could relate to my story, right, as a woman of color. So that was really important to me. And I thought that if it was so difficult for me to find that person, one, I have insurance. So, you know, my insurance covers that. So I'm very grateful to have that and privileged to have that. But it was just so difficult because I think the specialization piece is so hard.
Yeah.
And I've seen therapists before that I have learned so much from, but I know that maybe it could have gone a step further if maybe they had kind of understood more about, okay, this is how postpartum depression is playing into her story. So I realized there was a lack of that. And also a Filipina therapist, right, who were specialized in that. So part of me is like wanting to be that person. But
you're right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, so it was difficult to do that. I went through a few therapists, all who I'm very thankful for and learned so much from. It takes a little while to find someone that you connect with. And I now see someone who is a woman of color and is specialized in postpartum depression. And she has been such a gift to me. And she's also a mom. So she understands. She just understands. And so I am really grateful that I'm able to see her now. But throughout my journey to find access to a therapist, I just kept thinking to myself, I wish this was easier. I wish it was more normalized to see a mental health care provider. I wish that we prioritize it as much as going to see our general practitioner or a dentist, right? But it was difficult. And I think also what made it hard was there were a lot of long waiting lists, especially with those who were more specialized.
Yeah, right.
And but I think that also shows you how much need there is if that's the case.
Yes, you can say that as loud as you want.
I know.
We need help.
Yes, I know.
There needs to be more of us. Yep. So whenever you're ready, please come.
I know. I would love to. So that's all I wanted to say on that particular question.
Sure. You found a therapist and it took you a little while to find a good fit. So therefore kind of, you know, a little bit prolonged how quickly you could feel better. How did that impact your work and returning to work? And what was that process like?
Sure. Returning to work was extremely difficult. I'm grateful because I had 6 months off. But although I had that 6 months off, I'm a strong advocate for having much longer time off for moms and new parents.
Yeah.
It was a tough transition, but specifically with pumping. And I also returned to a new job, one that was much slower paced than my previous job. So I missed a lot of those aspects. I missed being in a fast paced environment, but I knew that's not what I needed in this season to be the mom that I wanted to be. I also felt a lot of guilt sending her to daycare. I missed her a lot. I cried a lot in the first few weeks. However, I think going back to work saved me and helped with my mental health to have that break. But again, I felt guilt about that.
Right? The mom, yeah. The mom. It's everywhere.
Yes. And her daycare is really great at sending photos throughout the day. But I remember in that first year, it was really hard for me to see them, especially when she first started walking and hit other milestones that I wasn't present for in the moment that it happened. So that was difficult as well. And I also had to fight some battles with HR about pumping during the workday. And it made me realize how unsupportive workplaces can be for new parents returning back to work, whether that's pumping or having flexibility in schedules. I think there's just so much that we can do to improve that for parents in the workplace, for moms, dads, partners. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've gotten a lot better with now. And I think especially in this time of quarantine, I've realized how much of my life, my daughter's life, that I miss throughout the week. And you know, that's a hard thing for me to wrestle with. But the reality is, you know, people have to work, people mm-hmm. have to pay bills. And so I am hopeful that we can find more solutions to be innovative and creative about being supportive with parents in the workplace. And my employer, my supervisor, have always been supportive, so I'm grateful for that. But I know that other families aren't as lucky.
Right. That all of that is so true. I mean, we just need so much more support than we have. And the idea that people are just supposed to return to work so quickly is sort of ridiculous. You know, mm-hmm. we just, like, this first year of life is really important, not just for the baby, but for us too. Mm-hmm. I fully agree with everything you're describing. Mm-hmm. So you've been through quite a lot, lots of different ups and downs and things you've had to work through. And now you've come so far and come out of it and come through it. What would you say to anybody who's going through it right now? Any kind of hopeful messages for them?
Sure. My daughter will be 2 in a few weeks, and you know, it takes time. I'm just now sort of accepting, embracing, and feeling like my new self. There's still a lot to process, but I would like to remind moms that, you know, you have everything that you need to be a great mom and a great parent. You know, your confidence in parenting will ebb and flow. There are still hard days, and mm-hmm. I know there'll be more to come. My daughter had a seizure back in February, and that was just a few months ago, and I felt that completely regressed my healing.
Yeah.
But you know, I've accepted that parenting is full of hard moments. There's always constantly a new thing to tackle.
Right.
But the most beautiful thing in all this, and I think is such a paradox, is that I've never felt such deeper love, passion, and reward. It's also humbling to me, and it's really cliche. It's so true, but you never know. You could love someone as much as your kid. Right. And I know that each day I continue to be refined, and I know I was called to do this to be a mom. And I think also that self-care is so important. Mm-hmm. Self-care can seem, or at least to me, it was just a new concept. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, I'm a person who's constantly going. Like, I don't know what that means. Right, right. And so I learned to prioritize that despite the mom guilt, right? Because I see that as when we're taking care of ourselves, when we're choosing to prioritize ourselves as moms and as parents, that makes us better parents to our children. Right. And so prioritize yourself every day. Take at least 5 to 15 minutes to do something for yourself. And I realize that's easy for me to say because I'm not a single parent and I have support at home, but I hope that parents will find time to do this and to give ourselves grace. We're so hard on ourselves. Mm-hmm. I was so hard on myself in that first year. And I know that if I were to do this again, which my heart is more open to now, something I couldn't say just a few months ago, mm-hmm. I know what I would do differently. And I think just as much as we plan, you know, that we have birth plans, make a postpartum plan, reach mm-hmm. out for help. Don't hesitate. You're not alone in this, even though in your darkest moments, it may feel that way. You know, reach out and don't isolate yourself, because I think that's when depression and anxiety tends to creep in. And one last thing I'll also say is trying to go back to doing things that you love. I am very intentional about keeping time that I need for myself. And I'm working on making sure that doesn't feel selfish to me, because I know that I need that time to be a good parent and a good mom. But
yeah.
I'm grateful, because even through this journey, my support system, my mom, my husband, my brother, they've also learned what I need to be okay. They've also seen, okay, Lynette's having a hard time. She needs a break. And so, again, I'm very grateful to have that around. But I would just say to give yourself some grace, prioritize yourself and reach out for help. Don't hesitate. I'm very open about my postpartum journey. And I know that other moms aren't, and that's okay. But if you ever need someone to talk to, you can reach out to me or your support systems.
Ah, thank you for that. That's very kind. Yeah, all of that. Those are all great pointers. And definitely if and when people can engage in those things, they can begin to feel better. And I really specifically appreciate you bringing in how, you know, the comment you made about your heart now being open to possibly a mm-hmm. second child. This is so real.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's so hard to even imagine going through something like what you've been through again. And to your point that you know what, to your point, like, you know what you would do differently to help prevent it from being that experience. And you know so much more now.
Yes.
So yes. whether you do or not, that's, you know, that's up to you and for the future. But just for that relief to be embodied in the sense that, you know, your heart can be more open to this.
Yes.
So that's part of the healing.
Yes.
And it doesn't require an outcome of any kind in order for that to be a true feeling now.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm just basking in that feeling of, okay, I'm feeling this. This is great. That means I'm healing. Cause yeah. I couldn't say that just a few months ago, or even when my daughter was born, I'm like, nope, this is it. I'm done. To feel this way is, I'm very happy with where I am.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your experience with us and all of these great pointers. I appreciate you for coming on.
Thank you, Dr. Kat. I have listened to your podcast even when I was pregnant. So I'm so grateful for you and your gifts and all that you share with the world. So I'm very grateful for you and your work.
Thank you so much.
If you have resonated with Lynette's story and you feel like you might need some support, you can always look to Postpartum Support International, postpartum.net, for resources in your local area. For those of you who are joining us for the first time on the Mom and Mind podcast, please know that you can listen from any podcast platform. Subscribe so that you can get every episode downloaded directly to you. Hearing stories of pain to healing are so vital for us all to know that we can make it through our own pain too. Thank you again, Lynette, for sharing your story. And thank you everyone for listening. Until next time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Please share this podcast. Together we can support moms and families so that no one has to deal with this alone. Come connect with us at momandmind.com.
Hi there, I'm Andrea Owen, self-help author with 19 translations of my books, global keynote speaker, and life coach. My podcast, Make Some Noise, has been serving up self-help in a simple-to-digest way for the last decade. The topics brought in each episode are practical and easy to implement around topics such as working through fears that keep you stuck, different modalities of therapy, managing your negative self-talk, and more. We bring you guest experts, solo episodes, and I even coach listeners on the air around relatable struggles. I also do my best to weave my sense of humor into some heavy topics because, let's face it, life can be pretty hard, and it's so much better when we can have some fun while walking through our challenges. Whether you're seasoned in personal development or just starting out, Make Some Noise podcast will help you become the best version of yourself, the person you're proud of when you look in the mirror and show up in your life. Simply search Make Some Noise with Andrea Owen wherever you listen to your podcasts.